It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. This evening at the City of Asylum on the North Side, one of the world's better-known expatriate dissidents, Chen Guangcheng, a self-taught lawyer and human rights activist who has been blind since birth, will read from his memoir, The Barefoot Lawyer, A Blind Man's Fight for Justice and Freedom in China. The story of Mr. Chen's escape from confinement in his native China to the U.S. Embassy in Beijing made international headlines in 2012. Mr. Chen has since moved to the United States and lives with his wife and two children in the Washington, D.C. area. He joins us now in studio, sitting directly across from me with his trademark aviator glasses, and next to him, his translator. Chen Guangcheng, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Also with us is the person doing the translating today, Danica Mills. Danica, good to have you with us.
Thanks so much.
And you can join the conversation with your comments and questions for Chen Guangcheng at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is essspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at essspgh. Again, the number 412-246-2002. Chen Guangcheng, this is your second visit to Pittsburgh. What are your impressions of our city?
I've
felt both times that the people of Pittsburgh are extremely kind and generous, and I'm really glad to be here again.
When you first came to the United States 3 years ago, some analysts in both the West and Western and Chinese media predicted that your influence would wane once you left China. How much clout do you feel that you still have as a voice for the oppressed in China?
I think
that's an outdated view. Since the development of the internet and the ability for information to pass freely, I think things are very different.
那么现在呢，我们如果想和中国的朋友联系呢，是非常简单，可以说用在几秒钟之内，我们就可以联系上，而且不断的交流，就像坐在一个房子里，没有太大的区别。And
it's nowadays, if we want to get in touch with our friends back home in China, it's really a matter of seconds. We can connect with them immediately. It's almost like being in the same room.
I'm curious about your status as far as the Chinese government is concerned. And if I wanted to go on the computer in China and look up information about you, what would happen?
现在呢，有这么两个可能性，一个呢就是中国在互联网上也能查到我的一些信息，但是很多有利于我的信息呢也被中共给删掉了，当然也会查到更多是中共的说法。另一方面呢，就是说很多中国的民众都学会了翻墙，他们可以通过。这个翻墙软件呢来看到世界的自由信息，所以说他们想获得我的信息并不是特别难。
There are two aspects to that. For one, if you go search for under my name in China, you will be able to find some things about me, but they're mostly that information is not doesn't portray me in a favorable light. It's all in favor of the party's view. And the other point is that nowadays there are more and more software and technology that's available to people to help them get over the sensors and over the firewall.
How would you describe the human rights situation in China today?
我觉得呢，在中国的人权状况是越来越糟，因为随着中国人民的不断觉醒呢，中共非常害怕。丢失他抢来的权利，因为他以前是靠欺骗来欺骗民众，那么现在呢，由于这个信息的自由流通，比以前强很多，所以呢，大家已经不是那么容易被骗了，所以他们的打压也非常强烈。The
situation regarding human rights in China is getting worse and worse, and in part that's because people are understanding their rights more and more, and understanding their situation vis-a-vis their rights, and this leaves the party with the only tool in their quiver is to oppress with greater intensity, but they won't be able to continue. They're not able to continually fool and trick the people as they did in the past.
很多维权者呢，为了追求社会公正，被中共迫害。那么有很多律师呢，就站起来，因为他知道中共呢是违反自己的法律，那么去支持这些站起来的律师去支持这些维权者的时候呢，又会遭到中共的迫害，就会停止他的律师执照，或者是把他，以莫须有的罪名关进监狱，等等。
And there are a lot of activists who are standing up to the oppression that's taking place and are being put in jail and suffering harassment of various types. At the same time, there are a lot of attorneys and human rights lawyers who are coming forward to try to assist with those cases. And they, are, in turn, are having their licenses revoked. They themselves are being harassed and put in jail.
Are authorities continuing to harass your family in China, Mr. Chen?
现在呢，对我国内的家人倒问题不大。现在中共依然在追踪我在国际上的行动，因为我一直在持续的关注人权，讨伐中共的这种迫害人权的恶行。所以呢，中共对我住在美国内，一直想各种办法来威胁，来干扰。
My family back in China is not suffering the same kind of harassment as before, but because I continue to speak out wherever I go about the realities of the Chinese Communist Party, they are continuing to threaten me here and wherever I go in the U.S.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. If you are just tuning in, you have not stumbled upon a Chinese and English language radio station, but in fact, you're listening to WESA and Essential Pittsburgh. As our guest today, a man we are honored to have, Chen Guangcheng, an expatriate dissident, self-taught lawyer and human rights activist who escaped from China to the U.S. Embassy and eventually to the United States, where he lives today. And he's just completed a memoir entitled The Barefoot Lawyer. What is the meaning, Mr. Chen, behind the title, The Barefoot Lawyer?
这个赤脚律师的来源呢，是来自于这个赤脚医生。当时呢，这个在五六十年代、六七十年代的时候，这个中国呢，对一些有知识的农民，简单的做医疗的培训，让他在农村为民众做医疗服务。这些医生呢，赤着脚和在地里干活的农民一起，所以就被称为赤脚医生。那么，典型的就是没有正式的执照。
The term barefoot lawyer originally comes from the term barefoot doctor, which was which came out during the Cultural Revolution when the government sponsored and supported peasants and farmers to learn something about medicine, especially in remote areas where there was not a lot of medical care. And these people would actually be working in the fields along with the other peasants. And that's how the term came about.
那么赤脚律师呢，是在中国很多这个受到迫害的农民当中，一些有知识的人自己学习了法律，来用这些法律来这个反抗这个当权者的迫害，要求他们呢按照法律来公正的对待农民，不要侵犯农民的利益。那么这些人当然不被中共认可，不会有这个律师正式的律师执照来执业，所以呢，他们就被称为赤脚律师。
Now, in recent times, people in the countryside have begun to take it upon themselves to learn about the law and their legal rights. And in the process, they're becoming known as barefoot lawyers. And of course, in this case, the government, the authorities are not promoting their activities at all. And that's where the term comes from.
实际上他们做的就是律师的工作。
But the work that they're doing is really the work of lawyers and attorneys.
I mentioned at the very beginning of our show that some have compared your accomplishments to those of Helen Keller. You have been blind since infancy. What was it like for you growing up in a poor village in eastern China?
Mm-hmm.
我觉得呢，我们生活在中国农村的那种当时的那种贫穷的程度呢，是很难超出大家的想象的。实际上即使那个时候大家可能一年到头都能吃到一点肉啊，老百姓呢只是靠地里的一点蔬菜来维持生计，靠地里种的粮食维持生计，所以经济上是非常非常困难。
And my youth growing up in a poor village in China is probably more than what most people can imagine. We were hungry much of the time. In a year, we maybe had meat once throughout the year. And besides that, we...
Meat once a year?
Yeah. And
wow.
Besides that, we depended on the vegetables that we grew to support ourselves.
所以说呢，衣服呢一般都是哥哥穿完了再给弟弟穿啊，这样的一个衣服可能要穿十好几年，破了再补一补，然后要补好多次，这样的状况。就连我上学之后呢，也是只一天可能只到能吃半饱就不错了，所以说好多年来一直是饿着肚子来读完十几年的书。
And the poverty was pretty extreme. Our clothes were all hand-me-downs from all of our siblings, and we'd have patches on patches of clothes. That was just what we could do. And when I went off to school when I was 18, I spent much of that time half hungry, half starving, and I could only sort of eat my fill on a very, very rare occasion, if at all.
那个时候住的都是小草屋、茅草屋，然后呢，就是，出行到赶集出去买东西都是要靠步行，连自行车都很少有。
And in my village, most of our houses were thatched and mud houses, and there were very few vehicles, even very few bicycles at the time. And so when we went to market, it was all by foot.
You didn't begin your primary school education until you were 18 at a state boarding school for the blind. Why didn't your education begin sooner?
因为在中国呢，在80年代之前，中国只有这个五家盲校，根本没有残疾人受教育的地方。那么到了80年代中期以后呢，中国有了一些盲校以后，我才有机会去读书。
It was because up until the 1980s, there were only 5 schools for the blind in all of China. And so it was after that in the late 80s, that more schools were being built, and I finally had the opportunity to go to school.
And how did you end up teaching yourself about the law?
实际上呢，这个当时这个自学法律是一个是我自学，一个是我到大学以后有一个选修。自学呢，就是说因为早期呢，这个残疾人的权利被侵犯的非常厉害，所以我就想能有一个渠道来解决这个问题。那么在那个时候呢，法律慢慢的很多广播热线啊都在谈法律的问题，所以我就从广播上学一些法律知识，找一些法律资料来请别人读给我听。到大学以后呢，我可以选修一个法律课，所以我就选修了它。那么这两方面的知识让我来学习法律。
My knowledge of the law came from two places. One was the study that I did on my own, and the other was from a course I was able to take in college. So the reason why I came to that was because I especially disabled people in my area were having their rights violated on a regular basis, and so I felt it was necessary to understand legal rights. And so I learned what I could on my own. I also learned a lot from the radio, from information that came on broadcasts.
From Chinese radio or from broadcasts from outside China?
最早的时候是中国的广播，中国的广播有一些律师热线，我可以从那听。当然后来呢，我就从国际广播，就是短播，听到很多国际广播电台的信息，这个呢就让我增长了很多社会知识、民主知识、社会这个公民社会的一些知识。
Early on, I learned from Chinese broadcasts. We had lawyer hotline and things, programs of that nature. And then later on, I learned more and more from foreign broadcasts, and I heard about other issues like democracy and civil rights and other issues of that kind.
Many people, I would imagine, in China could have learned in the way that you did, but you ended up being the one to stand up for yourself and others. What is it about you, Chen, that gave you the determination and the courage to do what you did, which eventually came at great peril to you and your family?
因为早期呢，可能信息的发信息有关系吧。早期这个，我可以说站起来的人是比较少的，所以说受打压也是非常的严重。那么，我觉得随着这个信息的传播的越来越容易呢，站起来的人越来越多。到目前为止呢，中国每年可能有100人以上的这种抗法行动、抗暴行动，要有20多万起。所以我觉得，其实这个最重要的还是获取信息，能让人觉醒。
I think it's really about information and having information to that inspires people to go against what's happening. And this is going on more and more in China. People are getting more and more information. And what we're seeing now is that there are more than 200,000 protests happening throughout the country every year. Contrary to what the authorities are doing.
所以呢，我觉得实际上现在中国也有很多人已经站起来了。虽然没有我们那个时候那么早，但是他们的信息呢都被中共给封锁，外界很难了解到。再一个呢，这些朋友可能也还没有像我当初那样的通过短波呀，通过各方面的渠道跟国际社会建立起这个联系。我想这个都是非常重要的，所以我也想特别强调，让中国的民众呢。
And unlike when back when I was starting out, there are few people working in this area. There are more and more people who are willing to stand up because they're able to connect and because of the information that they're getting. It's the thing is that people on the outside are not hearing about it, and so. Back when I was starting out, I got a lot of information from the radio, from shortwave, but there are many other avenues to getting information now. And I want people to know that they need to share what's going on, share information so everybody can communicate.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is human rights activist Chen Guangcheng. He escaped confinement in his native China and made his way to the United States. He now lives in Washington with his wife and two children. He's visiting Pittsburgh and speaking at the City of Asylum tonight about his book. He'll read from his book, The Barefoot Lawyer. And you've probably figured out by now that this is a live show, and you are welcome to participate. If you have questions for Chen Guangcheng, if you are like so many citizens who have a fascination about the work and the courage of this man, 412-246-2002 is the number to call to take part, to voice an opinion, or ask a question of Mr. Chen. Again, 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number, 412-246-2002. We will take a break and come back and take your calls and questions and hear more of mine on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and my guest for the entire hour today is human rights activist Chen Guangcheng, now internationally known and legendary for his escape from confinement in his native China because of the stands that he took, and he now lives in the United States in the Washington, D.C. area. He's in Pittsburgh. He's appearing at the City of Asylum tonight on the North Side. We'll have more about that coming up, but we would like to hear from you at 412-246-2002. You can take part in this live conversation, which we are fortunate to have Danica Mills involved in as she translates for both myself and Mr. Chen. So thank you, Danica, for being here. Thank you, Mr. Chen.
Thank you
again,
Paul,
for being here. And 412-246-2002 is the number to call with a comment or a question. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM, on Twitter at ESSPGH. Mr. Chen, of course, you were an outspoken critic of government policy in China You challenged the Chinese government on forced abortions related to its one-child policy, and you openly defied this policy by having two children of your own. You were doing a very dangerous thing. Did you know how dangerous this was for you and your family, and what gave you the courage to go through with it?
我觉得呢，是在中国呢，计划生育这个问题就像一个高压线一样啊，没有任何人敢碰，而且呢，中共也一再的给中国人民灌输，就是说在计划生育的问题上啊，你必须100%的服从，没有任何条件可以讲，一直他们就靠暴力来推行这个。
So the one-child policy is sort of like the third rail of in politics in China. It's something that nobody can touch. You can't go near it. It's a issue that's too sensitive for anybody to confront. And they've completely controlled this whole issue. So you know there's no wiggle room. There's no area for concessions. And that's why they end up using violence to carry it out.
所以呢，这个当时呢，这个政策存在就让这些政府官员呢就肆无忌惮的来践踏公民的权利啊！这个迫害人权的情况是非常严重，可以说各种各样侵犯人权的案例呢，你在这个计划生育的问题里都能找得到，像酷刑啊、株连家人啊，甚至逼死人命啊，都大有发生，实在让人忍无可忍。这样的事情，你听到妇女在痛哭、孩子在惨叫这样的状况，我想任何一个有良知的人都不可能沉默。
And when it comes to the one-child policy, the officials and authorities use really extreme levels of violence and brutality to carry it out. And you'll see in the one-child policy campaigns that every kind of human rights violation are present, from torture, from beatings, from forcing people to take their own lives. Really, everything is present there. And every kind of story you'll see, and when you hear the cries of women and babies being brutalized, I think any person with a rational good heart would have to react.
如果一个妇女怀孕了呢，那这中共的这个计生部门就会想办法找到她啊。如果白天找不到，就晚上跳到她家里去。 撞开门把她抓走去做强制堕胎，如果抓不到这个妇女呢，就会抓她的家人、兄弟啊、父母啊，然后抓她的邻居啊，抓去酷刑，逼这个妇女去堕胎。And
excuse me, in case of a pregnant woman who they felt was overbirthing, as they call it, they would seek her out during the day in her own home. If they didn't find her, they'd go at night. If they didn't find her at night, they would take the other family members in to be detained, where they'd be often tortured, brutalized, kept in confinement for extended periods of time.
What?
And if they did find her, then she would be forced to undergo an abortion against her will.
Now, what do you think of China's apparently altering of its one-child policy to permit married couples to have two children?
我觉得有这么几个，第一个呢，就是说这个之前呢，中共不承认在国际上不承认有这个暴力计生的问题。自从我们的把这个调查报告公布以后呢，全世界知道中共在进行这样惨无人道的事情。我想，那么全世界就有很多机构啊、个人都在讨伐中共这样一个政策。我觉得这是一个促使中共改变的原因。另外一个呢，这个计划生育政策并没有根本的改变，只是从一胎化到了二胎化，也就是说把。 把要这个堕胎的对象呢，从原来的第二胎瞄准到了现在的第三胎或者更多，那么所以呢，这个政策并没有根本的改变。I
think there are two issues of note in this question. For one, for many years, the Chinese Communist Party has denied the issue of the violent one-child policy and the surrounding problems with it. But because many organizations around the world have started to look into it and have been investigating it, it has caused them to try to make a change and begin to recognize that the policy exists in that way. So that's one thing. And the other issue to note is that in changing this policy in name, they haven't really changed the overall structure of the family planning system. So it's couples are allowed to have two children now, then the focus will just be on a third or
right.
Another number. instead of the second child.
Sure. 412-246-2002, the number to call. We have Al from Pittsburgh on the line with a couple of questions. Al, thanks for joining us. We have other people that want to get in and lots of other questions, so be as expedient as you can.
Okay. First, how did he learn about the law? Did he use Braille books? Did people read to him? Second question, is there a lot of Chinese students studying in this country? When they go back to China...
Al, let's start with your first question. It's a very good question, and stay on the line, and then we'll get to your second one.
Yeah.
So let Mr. Chen go ahead and answer.
实际上呢, 我们在中国学习法律是非常困难的, 那个时候连除了有一本残疾保障法以外, 其他的任何的 盲文的法律书都没有, 只能是呢, 别人读着法律条文, 我把它用盲文抄下来, 然后再学。
Back then, it was very, very difficult to come upon anything related to the law in Braille. The only thing available to us was the protection clause, which was a law that was promoted for the rights of disabled people. But besides that, I had no materials in Braille, and so I had to rely on people reading to me, and then I would copy down in Braille from what I was read.
那个时候我很想用录音把它录下来，然后我听就可以学，不用再用盲文写下来，非常麻烦。那么实际上那个时候连100多块钱的一个小录音机我都完全没有办法去买的。And
I always wanted to buy a tape recorder so that I could record what people read to me, and that way I could listen and study what people read to me. But even the $100 that I needed at the time to buy a tape recorder was too much for me.
And what was the second part of your question, Al?
There are many Chinese students studying in this country. Does he think when these students go back to China, they will could have a significant effect on Chinese government policy? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Al.
首先我觉得会有影响，因为很多人呢，他毕竟这个看到民主、自由的、公正的社会以后呢，再回去看到中国一些不公的事情的时候，他本能的良知就会做一些事情。I
think that it will have an impact because I think when people live in and see a just and working society, it affects them. And I think when they go back home, they'll want to change what they see around them.
另外呢，就是说有些人呢，他是来自于中国的这个官宦家庭，那么他可能对中国社会的一些情况也不了解。我想他可能需要有一个认识或了解的过程。还有就是他本身就是这个既得利益集团的一个部分，他是不是能够真正从一个更高层面的社会公正的角度来推动中国社会的改变呢？我想也未必全部都是。On
the other hand, there are a lot of students here who come from very privileged families, and they may not understand a lot of the reality that exists in China. And they also are from privileged families of privilege, and so they're reaping the benefits of the current system. And so it will definitely be a process through which they'll need to understand what's going on before they can have an effect.
Again, thank you for that call, Al, and we'll get to more calls here in a moment. But I wanted to ask you, Chen, about when you were confined. You were kept at home. You were not allowed to leave. You were brutally beaten, along with your wife. No one was allowed to leave your house. No one could go in. And I'm wondering how you ever began to think that you could escape your confinement or house arrest, as some people call it.
I think that
we were living under extremely difficult circumstances at the time. I knew that the people who were watching us were also human. And we have a saying that even the tiger needs to take a nap sometimes. So I I felt that as long as we were vigilant and careful and watchful, we would find a way to break through.
当然也不容易，我们经过了一年多的努力，也曾想过挖过地道，而且挖了两米的来深，又后来被中共发现就给堵上了，也曾想过好多种逃脱的方法，但是也尝试过无数次，都被对方发现，但是他们也有意识到我们是要逃走，后来呢，我们还是成功了。
But it took quite a long time. We were thinking about it and working on it for over a year. And during that time, we tried all different methods of escape. We dug a tunnel. We tried numerous times to get by them. But each time we were found out. And when we dug the tunnel, we were beaten violently as a result. So it took quite a while.Before I was actually successful.
And how did you end up escaping, Mr. Chen? It's a feat that would be difficult for anyone under those circumstances, but especially someone like yourself who is blind.
是，当时呢，这个看守有好几个，多的时候九个，就住在我们的房子里，跟我们面对面的坐在一起看着我们。那么当然逃脱是非常困难，而且院子外面、村子每一个路口，一直到村外。层层的岗哨，但是呢，后来我们还是想办法，怎么说呢？利用几秒钟的一个时间呢，就是看守倒水的时候，我跑到我的这个院子墙的下边，然后和稍作迟疑，然后很快的翻越这墙。最后呢，我翻越了八道墙，越过了差不多九道中共的岗哨，总算是花了二十多个小时逃到了我们邻村的西市谷。
It was extremely difficult. At that time, there were maybe six or nine people living in our yard with us and sometimes in our house with us. And outside of our yard, there were many layers of guards throughout the village. So we took advantage of that day when a guard got up to pour some hot water and momentarily blocked the view of another guard. And I ran over to a corner of the yard where they couldn't see me. And from there, I climbed over some eight walls, past nine layers of guards, and eventually made it to the neighboring village in a process that took over 20 hours.
特别是呢，我在翻越第五道墙以后呢，我的右脚的三块骨头被摔断了。那么接下来的路呢，我只有靠爬着走出来。所以说，困难是可想而知的。
And when I climbed over the fifth wall, I fell on the other side and broke my foot. So following that, I had to crawl basically throughout the rest of my escape. And so you can imagine how difficult it was.
It sounds like, I can only imagine. And it sounds like something out of a Hollywood movie, except that it's true.
对，这是真实的故事。
Yeah, it's a true story.
yes, we know. And so you finally get to the U.S. Embassy in Beijing. And in your memoir, you write about feeling extreme pressure from aides to then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton,to quickly accept a deal with the Chinese, one that you feared would expose you and your family to more abuse. So what was the deal that they were offering, and why were you being pressured? And what made you reluctant to accept it?
I think this is still the White House very worried about their relationship with China.因为这个人权问题而受到影响，所以呢就愿意保障他们的商业利益而牺牲人权，所以就给我很多压力，希望我尽快的离开美国使馆，结束这个危机，让他们呢还可以继续和中共来进行交往，这可能是最根本的原因。
I think the primary reason that I was under so much pressure was that the White House felt it was expedient to maintain the U.S.-China relationship above all. And so they gave me quite a lot of pressure to leave the embassy as quickly as possible so that they could then continue their discussions between the two parties.
总的来说呢，我是非常感谢当时这个美国给了我这样一个到美国使馆紧急避险的机会。我想尽管美国最后还是 没有坚持自己的民主、自由、人权这些原则，这个屈服了商业利益，屈服了中共的压力。但是我想呢，美国仍然是我非常感谢的，也仍然是在全世界做的最好的国家，在人权问题上。我想，如果我进了其他使馆的话，可能情况会更糟。
But at the same time, I am extremely grateful that I was able to come to the American embassy and that the Americans allowed me to seek safety there. And even though in the process of finding a way for me to finding a way to deal with my situation, the Americans in many ways gave up a lot of their ideals and values, I still feel that America is one of the strongest nations when it comes to human rights, and that if I had gone to another embassy at that time, my situation might have been much worse.
所以呢，我想，非常感谢美国人民缔造了这样一个伟大的国家，也想提醒大家呢，其实说中共现在对美国的学术自由、媒体自由等各方面的渗透影响也非常大，非常值得大家警惕。
And so I always want to be sure to let the American people know how grateful I am for this country that they have established and they carry on. And I want everybody to realize they need to be careful about the influence of China on American academia and freedom of speech, freedom of the press.
And we certainly understand that you are grateful for what the United States government has done for you. But do you feel that you were misled by U.S. diplomats? Because if so, that would contradict Hillary Clinton's assertion in her recent memoir that U.S. officials, quote, had done what Chen said he wanted every step of the way.
I don't feel that they followed my every wish.
对，当时因为我非常清楚，我要求有一个电脑能够看到外边发生的信息，但是我进使馆以后，第二天这个电脑就被停下来，这个白宫就命令他们不允许再给我传递。
For example, on the second day at the embassy, I asked for a computer so that I could have access to information outside. They took the computer on the under orders from the White House. I was not allowed to have access to the outside, and so they took my computer and closed off all communications.
但是那些外交官们呢，觉得White House的这个命令呢太过分了，他们不愿意把我的收音机拿走，所以我还是能够听到外边的一点消息。But
some of the embassy staff seemed to feel that the White House orders were too extreme, and so they allowed me to keep my radio, so I got a little bit of information from that.
所以我非常感谢当时在美国使馆帮助过我的那些外交官们，我能感受得到他们非常的善良，也非常愿意帮助我，但是又不得不遵守他们老板的命令。So
I'm extremely grateful to the embassy staff at that time because I could tell that they were extremely kind and generous and wanted to do whatever they could to help me. But I also understood that they were getting pressure from their boss.
Certainly. And we have to go quickly because we need to get to a break. But just to kind of put the final period on this particular chapter that we're talking about of your life. Initially, you wanted to stay in China. Then you changed your mind and you decided it would be safer to leave the country. So when and why did you decide to leave China? Mm-hmm.
因为开始我觉得呢，如果大家都能够站在人权的角度，让这个社会变得更公正的话，我想这个我的这个案子已经是，中共呢是没有任何的理由，找出他们的借口来。美国政府可以完全按照国际法，按照人权宪章，联合国的来要求他们遵守。可是最后我发现呢，这个完全不是我想的这个样子啊，美国政府也没有尽全力来要求中共遵守国际法。 另外一个呢，就是说中共所有的承诺呢，好像都不是原来的样子。我进了医院以后，是处于一种非常非常危险当中。医院里当时中共安排了400多人在那控制我们。
At first, I felt sure that people would want to stand on the side of human rights and upholding the law, upholding international law, and I felt that my case was extremely clear, and hence the Americans would surely do whatever they could to force the Chinese to adhere to international human rights law. But then I found that that what was happening wasn't quite as I had expected. The Chinese weren't sticking by their promises. The Americans weren't holding them to their promises. And so when I got to the hospital, I found the situation was extremely dire. And it was a Chinese-controlled hospital, and they'd put 400 or so guards in plain clothes and uniform throughout the hospital. And I felt in extreme danger.
对，当时呢，我在使馆的时候，他们告诉我说，哦，你去医院，然后我们就住在你的隔壁，一直到你离开医院，我都会和你们住在一起。可是当我们走进病房以后，却找不到任何一个当时给我承诺的这些美国的官员，这让我觉得这些承诺根本就不可能兑现。
And when I was in the embassy, embassy staff told me that when I went to the hospital, they would be staying in a room right next to mine, and that they would be on hand if I needed them. And I felt assured, reassured by that. But then when I got to the hospital, there was nobody there. And so I felt that there were, you know, things were really closing in on me.
So you made your way to the United States, and now here you are with us on Essential Pittsburgh. My guest is human rights activist Chen Guang Cheng, who's in Pittsburgh, speaking tonight at the City of Asylum. He'll be reading from his book, The Barefoot Lawyer, and we'll talk more with him, and we will take your questions, including you, Justin, from Canonsburg. You've been waiting for a long time to talk to Mr. Chen. We'll get to all of that and more coming up on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest, human rights activist Chen Guang Cheng, who escaped confinement in his native China and made his way to the United States. He's the author of the book, The Barefoot Lawyer, his memoir. He'll be reading from that tonight at the City of Asylum, which is why he's in Pittsburgh. And we are very excited and happy to have him here as our guest. And he'll be here with us until the top of the hour. Not nearly enough time, but we'll take as many calls and questions as we can, starting with Justin in Canonsburg. Justin, thank you for waiting patiently. Go ahead with your question for Mr. Chen.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me on. I'm a software developer, so you had touched upon this briefly in a previous question on the software that's used to get around the sensors in China. So my question was, I had recently read an article that the use of this software or the adoption rate of this software was not very widespread, and it's slower than expected. So I guess my question is, how do you feel about the use of this? How widespread it is? Is it growing? And what can be done to increase availability to those in China?
All right, Justin. Well, thank you for that question. Hopefully, Mr. Chen can answer that for you.
我觉得呢，实际上中国很多网友都在翻墙啊，就连昨天晚上我还跟国内的一个朋友联系，他很快就下载了一个翻墙的软件，翻墙出来看外面的声音，并且把看到的东西呢又重新发给我，让我听。我觉得实际上呢，这个现在有很多可以翻墙的软件，大家都在用，可能用的是不同的软件。 所以说中国没有多少人在用翻墙的软件，我觉得这不是事实，而且是越来越多。
I think actually there are a lot of people using this kind of software to get over the firewall. In fact, it was just last night that I was in a chat room with a friend online, and he went online, downloaded anti-firewall software, and was able to go beyond the firewall to get information, which he then copied and put back in the chat room. So I think there are a lot of different kinds of software that people are using, and it's widely available. I think it's a little bit of misinformation to say that that it's not being widely used.
All right, Justin, thank you for that call. 412-246-2002, the number to call. When you first came to the United States, you took a position, Chen, as a visiting scholar at New York University School of Law. But a year later, you accused NYU of asking you to leave under relenting pressure from Beijing. What exactly happened, and what do you have to say about other Western universities setting up expansion schools in China?
我觉得呢，这是非常值得大家警惕的，也是非常危险的啊！中共现在呢，从很早以前就开始对美国的这个学术自由进行渗透影响啊！现在我觉得，当然，纽约大学当时的事情我已经说得很清楚，而且我也认为呢，它不只是美纽约大学一个，所以呢，这是非常值得大家警惕的。那现在中共又推出了一个大外宣，就是说试图对国际媒体进行影响。 前一个阶段，11月2号呢，路透社报道说，中共对14个国家的广播进行影响，所以我觉得这个特别值得大家警惕。
First of all, I think this is the issue of academic freedom and influence on academia, American academia, of the Chinese communist authorities is something that we all need to be aware of here and to pay particular attention to. As I said at the time, this was not an issue only of NYU, but of something that all institutions here need to be aware of. And it's also going past just academia. I think it was Reuters that recently reported that the 14 countries in the world are coming under the influence in their media, media companies, and are... Reuters reported that that a number of media companies in these 14 countries are coming under the influence of the Chinese communist authorities.
The United Nations Conference on Climate Change is taking place in Paris. It's and of course the world's biggest carbon polluter is China. Do you think China will make a concerted effort to join with the world to fight pollution and global warming? Mm-hmm.
我觉得中国可能会做出一些承诺，但是这些承诺呢，过3年或者5年以后，大家会发现这承诺根本兑现不了，因为在中国，因为环保问题，很多民众都站起来忍无可忍了，站起来挑战，那么结果都被中共呢用武警来镇压，所以说我觉得他如果真想解决环保问题，不是不能解决，而是他不会去真正的解决。
I think what people are going to find is that in a few years that the promises that were made by the Chinese communist authorities are not being carried out. When it comes to the people in China, a lot of people are very aware of these issues and are willing to do what they can. But every time people speak out or try to fight back, they are there's a crackdown. So it's not that China is not able to make a change in the area of environmental conservation, but that the will isn't there from the leadership.
We're down to just a few seconds, but how bad is the pollution in China?
我觉得在中国呢，现在老百姓的话说就是不见天日，然后没有一条河是干净的，这是老百姓的说法。
And a phrase that people are using nowadays in China is that it's that everything is heating up and it's and there's not one river that's clean.
就连大家吃的东西现在也都是非常不安全，各种各样的添加剂都在里边。
And when even when it comes to food, there's no safety, and there are all kinds of chemical elements that are put in people's food.
In 10 seconds or less, what are the things in China that you miss?
当然，我在中国跟我们的农民朋友们在一起的时候都是非常的真诚啊，大家都能够很真诚的表达自己的想法，给你善意的提醒啊，给你一些帮助，这种 没有太被中共污染的这个农村环境，这是这个人文环境是我非常非常想念的。
The thing that I most miss is the kindness and the directness of the Chinese people and my ability to interact with them in a very direct way.
Chen Guangcheng, Danica Mills, thank you so much for joining us. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you.